Lisa Lanier is our official attorney of this program, Lanier Law Group. She's available at lanierlawgroup.com, and she joins us every week at this time for something we call Lawyer Up. Lisa, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. I hope you guys are.
Doing very well. Lisa. It's good to talk to you. We're back after vacation, and good to be in with you. We've got three stories today about the law and inside the law. And the first one, I think the guy's family has got a slam dunk lawsuit here. His name is Jerry Moon. Family opened up his casket recently in Kelso, Washington to say goodbye to him and saw this is not our family member. It's not our dad. It's not Jerry Moon. So they called over the mortuary employees, and those people said, oh, no, no. People look different in death. That's him. Don't worry about it. It's fine. And they tried to cover it up. It was not him. They tried to cover it up. The body was a guy named Robert Pettyclerk, who wanted to be cremated. They took the wrong body. They took this guy, Jerry Moon, and cremated him. His express orders were, I definitely don't want to be cremated because, according to his religious beliefs, then he didn't know if he'd get to heaven or not.
And he had planned his funeral, 16 years before his death?
Yes, he had done all the arrangements, everything. All the I's were dotted, the T's were crossed. He had done everything right, and then the funeral home screwed it up and tried to cover it up. Lisa, I'm looking at a seven-figure lawsuit here. What are your thoughts?
It is. It's a slam dunk. The average settlement for something like this is somewhere in like the $200,000 to $400,000 category. There have been some really big verdicts. There was like a $2 million verdict and $1.5 million verdict for something like this. But typically, that's pretty unusual. Typically, you see around $200,000 to $400,000 for the family. It's all emotional distress. And yeah, it's a slam dunk. The basic duty of care of a funeral home is to, you know, burn the right body, embalm the right body. They were very negligent. And, yeah, they're going to be on the hook for this.
Well, a couple of questions. One, how often does this happen? You're referring to other cases. Is it fairly common?
It is fairly common. You see it sometimes, again, just at the morgue level, like at the hospital level, mm-hmm. They'll send the wrong body or mishandle a body. But then more often it happens with a funeral home or crematorium where they mix up the bodies or they do something crazy, like some kind of improper embalming, and you know, you hear these stories about the body pops up out of the casket and stuff like that.
Lord.
Dave was suggesting a sticker system or putting pictures of the person, pin it to them so you can look and say, wait a minute, that's not him. You know, you look and make sure, mm-hmm.
They catalog the bodies. They literally, the old toe tags and things like that. The bodies are literally they're indexed, and yeah, they should have kept track of that body. And the funniest part of the story is how they tried to convince the family that really was their dad, their father.
That's awful.
Hey, Lisa, I have a question. Does the emotional impact of the dad burning in hell for all of eternity enter into this judgment, you think?
Yeah, I think because for this family, their degree of emotional distress, I think, is greater because of their religious beliefs and the fact that this guy obviously had very firmly held beliefs about the way his body should be treated and that it would affect his afterlife. And for them, it's a greater impact than it would be for somebody who didn't believe that way.
Yeah, it'll stick with them forever. They're going to think, we don't know where he is now.
But through in hell.
Yeah, through no fault of his own. He did everything right. It's a terrible story. I'm glad you agree. Slam dunk lawsuit here. Another one, this is very interesting. The courts in Virginia have ruled on it. We'll see if it goes to a higher court, but long story short, a guy named Robert Broadwine impregnated a friend of his, Joyce Bruce, several years ago, 2010. They used a turkey baster to do this.
Non-traditionally.
The woman said to him, I really want to get pregnant. Can we use your sperm in a turkey baster and get me pregnant? They did. It worked. They got it done in 2010. The deal was, though, he said at the time, he didn't sign any papers or anything like that, and he felt like he should be a father to this child, have real parental rights to the child. The woman viewed it more as, I'm going to use your sperm, but you're just going to be a family friend, and we're not going to make you any kind of father figure. They signed no paperwork, and now that the kid is 5 or 6 years old, the courts have said, oh, he definitely has parental rights. Do you think that this goes any further? Do you think that another court could flip that around, Lisa?
Well, they certainly could, but I don't think they will because, it was really dumb of these folks not to enter into an agreement because you absolutely can have a known donor, in a situation like this where the donor relinquishes all parental rights. And Almost every state has a method for that to take place, and it's a matter of contract. And you see it with egg donors as well. And in this situation, these folks were taking on something very serious. They tried it over and over and over. She didn't get pregnant until like the third or fourth time. How can you go through all of that and have such a big misunderstanding about the parental role of two parties? It's just ludicrous that they didn't have this all reduced to a contract.
I know.
Didn't the initial reading, I thought we talked about this, Lisa, the other day, was the guy said, okay, cool, I'll just be, you know,
family friend.
A family friend from a distance. But he, the father in this case, mm-hmm. kept getting, you know, inching closer and closer to wanting to have full parental rights.
Well, after the baby was born, he got really attached to the child, and now he wants to be the father. And he said they thought about drawing up a contract, but it was just kind of they knew each other, liked each other. They didn't think it would be an issue. With the contract would have, if he had signed a contract saying he'll only be a friend, he would be bound to that.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You can do that. You can contract away those rights. But And it sounded like he sort of had a different idea all along to me, because it maybe, you know, what's the definition of I'll just be the kid's friend?
Yeah.
And he, you know, he wanted to name the child from the birth. You know,
yeah.
I mean, as soon as the kid was born, he sort of went, whoa, that's my kid, you know. And,
yeah.
And she, it's possible. Virginia has a statute in place for basically outlining the steps for a donor to waive rights, and they just didn't follow it.
Isn't that, it's really a bad situation now, because here you've got him wanting to be part of the kid's life and the woman not wanting him that way, and the kid's going to be up in limbo. So we'll see what happens there. But he's won this round in court, and probably it sounds like he's going to continue to win
every time.
Well, and the other thing that happens in these situations is this donor now, you know, he wants to have visitation, he wants to have rights, but he'll also have obligations that go along with that, like child support.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
He gets that, too.
Don't you think every time each one of these parents walks by the William Sonoma and sees a baster in the window, you just shake their head.
That magical moment, right?
Yes, and I'll ask everyone present here, if you use it for the purpose of getting pregnant, can you still use it at Thanksgiving?
For your turkey?
For the traditional purposes.
I hope they got rid of that turkey baster.
I think you got to frame it. You got to put it up in the kids' bedroom.
My first shoes.
You've got to.
Shadow box it.
Yeah, exactly. And finally, there's an interesting lawsuit here against Southwest Airlines. An Orange County, California family started suing on Monday, saying flight attendants failed to help their dying father and husband at John Wayne Airport in September. What happened was he went to the bathroom. They were flying from Oakland back to Orange County on Southwest Airlines. He went into the bathroom and wound up having a pulmonary embolism, and he was like, crying for help. He's saying, help me. And when they got there to the bathroom, he was wedged, lodged against it, so they couldn't open the door. And they felt like he was being an unruly passenger. So they got security after him. He was dying and did die, and they did not give him the help that he needed. There are a lot of more details in it. It's a long, drawn-out case. But what the family is claiming is, look, here this man was in distress. My husband was in distress, and you treated him like he was an unruly passenger, so they're suing. What do you think the chances are here that they'll do well? The airline says, we did all we could. What do you think?
Well, there is a standard of care in the airline industry that usually airlines contract with these emergency medical services on the ground, and they establish telephone contact. There's one company called MedAir, and it's basically designed for this very thing. They have doctors on the ground, and they work with cruise ships and airlines. And when there's an emergency, they talk them through what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these airplanes, you know, standard of care is for them to be stocked with certain drugs and emergency medical equipment. So I think that the key is, I mean, clearly they didn't follow that protocol, but the key is how he presented, because the airline's account of it makes it sound like he didn't present like a medical emergency, but instead he presented like he was agitated and possibly hostile. And
yes.
So they were treating him like a threat. And, you know, everybody worries about airline threats now and the terrorist threats and things like that. And so they thought he was some kind of threat. And so they called the police, not emergency medical.
Exactly. So can you understand where they're coming from, or do you think they have to know the difference? The family claims because they treated him like a threat, that's why he died. They didn't get care to him in time.
It may be. I mean, only about 10% of people who suffer pulmonary embolism die right away. And mm-hmm. a lot of them survive. It's usually pretty treatable. And, you know, it's actually something that's very common on airline flights, because the blood clots form in the lower extremities because you're sitting in that cramped position in that tiny little chair for so long,
mm-hmm.
and then it moves to the artery in the lung. So
yes.
it's something they see fairly often on flights, and so I think he just didn't have a typical presentation for it, though. Usually you have chest pain, it's like you're having a heart attack. But
right.
This guy did seem pretty agitated, and if that's the case, then they may have acted reasonably.
I'd be interested to see who wins this. It's kind of their word against his. You know, what did other passengers see, and how did he look? You know, what was it like?
Exactly. It's going to come right down to that, to passenger testimony about how he presented. And if he seemed angry and agitated, then I don't think the airline's on the hook for it.
Okay.
They always recommend you're supposed to, if you're on a flight longer than an hour, you're supposed to get up around 1 hour mark just to move around.
Get up and stretch.
Don't stay in your seat.
I'm going to pay attention to that now, just after hearing this. Because I sit in this chair every day for 4 hours.
It's not good for you.
No, it's not good for you. Listen to Biggie in there.
I think you're fine where you're at.
Yeah, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah. I got to get up and stretch every hour.
How'd you and Dem get a show?
The weirdest embolism.
He presented like an agitator.
We called the cop and they dragged his dead ass out of here.
Lisa, as always, great to talk to you. She's Lisa Lanier, our official attorney of the Two Guys in Chris Show. Get her at LanierLawGroup.com. She's president there. We'll talk to you again next week. Have a good weekend.
Sounds good. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.